Hey, it's Mike Halford from the Halford and Brough podcast. One, thanks for downloading. Two, thanks for listening. Three, why not leave a review while you listen to the podcast? And now, back to the show.
Good morning, Vancouver. It's Jason here. Jason Brough of Halford and Brough on Sportsnet 650. It's not because Mike slept in. This is not a team culture problem we have of sleeping in. I was guilty of it yesterday. Missed 2 minutes of the show. Mike is currently recording something in another studio. Repeat, not asleep. The official automotive sponsor of Halford and Brough is the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today. So Mike is going to join us in just a few minutes on today's show. A really terrific lineup of guests. Greg Wyshynski, we all love Greg, from ESPN. Lots to talk about in the hockey world, and we'll talk about it with Wish. Stephen Brunt at 7 o'clock. I think we'll talk a lot about the Battle of Alberta and how crazy it's been. I know we were all looking forward to the Battle of Alberta, but I don't think anyone expected this. Each game has been absolutely wild. The only unfortunate thing about this series is it could be over in the next game. This series deserves 7 games or 9 games or 11 games. It has been this wild. Rick Ball will join us at 8 o'clock, followed by Jack Michaels at 8:15. That's the Flames and the Oilers' perspective on this wild series. Dom is at home. Maybe he slept in. I don't know, but he's on the text thread right now. Laddie is in here with me right now. Good morning, Laddie. How are you?
Good morning. Maybe Dom sleeps in every day. We don't know.
Yeah, he could. I mean, he might, when he decides to work at home, he might just be in bed on his phone telling us which reads to read. I don't know.
100%.
So, Laddie, I want to ask you, because Halford's not here to moo about his stuff, what is going on with the goaltending in this Oilers Flames series, because this is getting ridiculous.
There's nothing going on with the goaltending. What are you talking about? It's been perfectly fine. No,
it is honestly, like, I'm watching this stuff and, you know, people are making the jokes about how it's just like the 80s when the Flames and Oilers would play. And I'm like, I think the goaltending's actually worse.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a gong show. I think you get the Mike Smith experience at one end. And, you know, with the Mike Smith experience comes some highs. You know, when he's on, he can be good. He can be one of the better goalies in the league. But when he's off, it can be within the same game,
yeah,
as we saw yesterday, where he can allow a goal from the complete other side of the ice. I guess he just lost it in the crowd, and
right,
it can happen. I've seen it before, but
no, that makes sense.
What a time for that to happen. And of course, Mike Smith is the one that it happens to, but tough goal there, but then he rebounds, you know, the team fights through it and they get the win. And then you have Markstrom on the other side, who has seemingly just lost every ounce of the technical base that he has. Mm-hmm. It's just gone. And he made one outstanding left pad save coming across, but man, it's just he looks so off right now that it's hard to watch. Hard to watch.
The unfortunate thing if you're a Flames fan is, first of all, that you're a Flames fan. But the second thing is that I would say last night the Flames did a pretty good job on Connor McDavid and that he didn't absolutely skate circles around them. Like, he was still a factor, still had a couple points, but he wasn't as dominant as he's been in other series. Put it this way, that game was there for the Flames. Like, it's not like the Oilers were unbelievable. The start that the Oilers got off to, or the start, I guess you would say, that Markey got off to, because it was the goal that Markey allowed, and then once again, you're like, oh God, what's going to happen? Is it going to get worse before it gets better? And it did. But then the Flames had this chance. They had this chance to battle back. It's just... If the Flames lose this series, they're going to wonder how they did it. And they're going to wonder how this team that was, for the most part, so solid throughout the regular season and played such buttoned-up hockey, the forecheck worked, they're good defensively, they had a goaltender they could trust, could all of a sudden just fall apart like this. David the City Worker texts into the Dunbar Lumber text line, if the Flames lose this series, is it official the Canucks made the right call going Demko over Markey? He hasn't looked good versus the Oilers. I don't know if you want to put it like
that. It's one series. I don't know if you can make
I don't know if you want to put it like that. You know, Demko has a long career left. There's no guarantee that he's not going to have a series like this. This happens to goalies.
And also, if you had this conversation at the end of the first round, we'd be laughing.
Yeah.
Because Markstrom was fantastic.
Yeah. No, I know. It is one of the weirdest series that I can remember. So let's talk a little bit more about and what happened.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No. What happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened?
Missed it?
You missed that?
What happened?
So the Oilers have taken a 3-1 series lead on the Calgary Flames because they beat them last night 5-3. And I was going to say 4-3, but I forgot about the late goal there. It was an absolute wild one, as we've come to expect from this series. That first game, the 9-6 game, or as people that listen to this show like to say, the 6-9 game. Nice.
Nice.
Nice, yeah. That was not just a one-off. That was this series. That was preparing us all for this series. The Oilers jumped out to a 3-0 lead in the first period, and it looked like they were just going to keep rolling a la game three, where they really did roll over the Flames. But it was more than just a 3-0 lead. It was the 1-0 lead that I thought, you know, I think everyone thought, like, what is Markey doing? It's behind his net, then the puck's in front of the net, and Markey isn't there, and that's a problem. The third goal, too. When Evander Kane scored, yet another goal in this series. Laddie, to me, to my amateur mind that doesn't know anything about goaltending and thinks that goaltenders should just, you know, act big, make themselves look big. What did you see on that goal? Because it was Evander Kane, and it was pretty much, like, it wasn't the hardest shot in the world. Maybe there was some accuracy to it. But to me, that looked like a shot that Jacob Markstrom had to save.
I'll have to look it up and actually do some live analysis because I was putting the baby down.
Oh, I see. In, so. Okay. Well, no worries. It was a shot that he
It looked like a bit of a
saved.
Muffin, actually, now that I just saw it. Hard to say. Sometimes those releases can fool you.
Yeah,
when it
sure.
comes off the stick in
yeah,
just a weird way.
But being fooled, right? Like, yeah. it just keeps on happening to Markey. The whole idea of a really solid goalie is, you know, he doesn't get fooled all that often. And, you know, most goals, you're like, well, he didn't mean to do that.
Well, and,
but he keeps doing it.
On those clean shots, too, Markstrom, that's sort of where he makes his bread and butter, right? Where it's he can stop those clean ones if he can see them. And there's as clean of a shot as you can get right there, guy walking in on the slot. But, yeah, I'd have to break it down a bit more to see. And I just think he's so off in a lot of different ways right now that it's not too far out of the equation that he could have just missed the muffin of a shot.
Well, speaking of muffins, we have to get by, we have to go forward in this game. Because the Flames did bounce back. They had Chris Tanev back in the lineup. And I think he did help. Even offensively, he had an assist. The Flames made it 3-2 in the second. And then in the third period, I thought I saw Steve Smith 2.0. And it's funny because Steve Smith 2.0 was by Mike Smith 1.0. When Rasmus Anderson on the PK just tries to ice it. Do we have the call here? Do we have the call?
I just received a text from Mr. Woodley.
Oh, what did Woodley say?
He says it hit the stick.
It hit the stick?
So there was a little bit of a deflection.
You know, the goal. Yeah, it hit the stick from a ways out. You guys are really, like, always looking for excuses to make for the goalies. I still think that's my amateur mind. That's a shot that he's got to save, like, especially at that point in the game. Mm-hmm. But anyway. Let's get back to the Rasmus Anderson goal where he beat Mike Smith from 150 feet. And I was watching this, and I was prepping for the show, and I was like, oh, boy, did the show just change entirely? Because we're going to have to talk about this Mike Smith blunder and where it ranks in playoff blunders. Imagine if Mike Smith had let that goal in, in the Flame or the Oilers hadn't bounced back and won that game. And the way they did it was they get in on the forecheck, led by Zach Hyman, who I think has been really good and really important for the Oilers in this playoff series. Then Yamamoto turns a puck over, following on the heels of Zach Hyman on the forecheck. It goes back to the point. Tyson Barrie shoots it. Nuge bangs in the rebound, and it was 4-3. And then they add another goal. An empty netter? Yeah, they added an empty netter to make it 5-3. But getting back to the Mike Smith blunder, I honestly wondered if we were going to sit here today and go through, you know how we do on Sports Talk Radio, we're like, what was the worst blunder in Stanley Cup playoff history? And then people would say some serious ones and say some jokey ones, and we'd go through the list and we'd go through the list. But we didn't really have to, or we don't really have to, because ultimately it didn't cost the Edmonton Oilers, and now they have a 3-1 series lead, and they're one win away from a trip to the conference finals, probably against Colorado, although St. Louis is still alive. Good morning, Mike Halford. Did you finish all your recordings?
Good morning, gentlemen. Sorry for the delay. I am here now. I understand we were talking about the Mike Smith blunder that was not all that costly in the end. What else have we gone over as the Oilers take a 3-1
lead? We've just gone over how wild this series has been and how game one wasn't a one-off. It was more a sign of things to come.
A harbinger.
A harbinger of things to come. And we're just talking about how it's almost unfortunate that this series could be over in 5 games. And now that I say that it could be over in 5 games, how many people would have predicted that the Oilers would win this one in 5?
With superior goaltending.
in a weird way, because I don't think anyone is sitting there and going, Mike Smith has been brilliant.
He's screwed up less.
Jacob Markstrom in round one against Dallas finished with a 153 goals against average, which is the most important goalie stat, and a 943 save percentage. Through the 5 games so far, Markstrom's goals against is 528, and his save percentage is 850. Now, you can be bad in a series where both goalies are bad, and at times Smith has certainly been bad, but they have not got enough from their top guys across the board in Calgary. Outside of game one, when Gaudreau and obviously Tkachuk found his offense, Gaudreau and Tkachuk have been dead silent the last 2 games, and Markstrom's been the second best goalie in the night. So it's not really that. It's surprising that the Flames are in this position, but when you look at the output and you look at the guys that haven't done anything for them in this series, it's not super surprising. They didn't have Tanev until last night. That was a big factor as well. The big question is if they're going to be able to right the ship here, because last night, to be honest, that was the first time that they really, I don't want to say muzzled Connor McDavid, but holding him to only 2 assists,
yeah,
that's a win in this series.
We were talking about that earlier. He wasn't dominant like he had been earlier in the series. So Brandon texts in, if Calgary is knocked out, where does the Flames front office go from here? And oh boy, do they have some decisions to make on their star players or who they thought were their star players. Johnny Gaudreau has had a fine playoffs. He scored the winning goal against the Dallas Stars. He hasn't been Connor McDavid good, but who is? I don't think you can sit there and say, oh, Johnny Gaudreau has been terrible. There's no way the Flames can sign him. I think you just start to think, do we really want to bring this group back together?
If they go out meekly in the second round, yeah.
And is it really worth it to sign a guy like Johnny Hockey to the contract that he's going to demand? Because if you think JT Miller can demand a big contract, Johnny can really demand a big contract.
Well, I mean, just look at the landscape right now. Round to round, expectations get lifted. Things are expected of your star players. So while it's, you know, if you look at Gaudreau's series on the whole, it's not terrible because he, like everybody else, racked up a ton of points in the first game. But he's got no goals now through 4 games, and he's got no points, period, through the last 2. So it's okay to go into a little bit of a dip and dive, just not right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because your opposition, the top-line guys on the Oilers, aren't just producing. They're producing at like 2-point-a-game clip.
John in Victoria texts in, don't start to sound like your colleagues in Calgary believing that Edmonton is a one-man team. They have depth this season for the first time ever. John, I mentioned Zach Hyman earlier in the show and how important he's been for the Oilers. We've mentioned Evander Kane time and time again. Yeah, the Oilers do have more depth.
Have we done the new Ryan Nugent Hopkins appreciation post yet? Because he was very good yesterday.
Well, we talked about how he scored the winning goal.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we talked about him at that length. But here's the thing. When Connor McDavid is playing like Connor McDavid has in these playoffs, don't get yourself fooled. He is the main reason the Oilers are where they at.
Can I just make a point?
When a guy plays when a guy plays that well, and there has to be so much focus on stopping his line, then it's only natural that some other guys are going to get the opportunity to step up and play well. And those guys, to their credit, guys like Zach Hyman have.
Laddie?
Yeah, I want to make a point. Even though we've just kind of made fun of Mike Smith for the last little while because of his blunders in the series, did you guys get to take a look at the expected goals numbers from the game yesterday?
I did not.
Smith was quite good, and he has been quite good in the entire series aside from the blunders. So I have to give him some credit that he actually has been pretty solid. And you look at Vasilevsky and all the praise that he got in that Game 4 victory for his play, Smith wasn't too far off last night in his performance. So he's been better than people are giving him credit for, including myself.
Well, for sure, because, I mean, the game went somewhat predictably because Mike Smith had to make some saves because the Oilers took a 3-0 lead into the second period. So it's natural that the balance is going to turn a little bit in the game and the Flames are going to get their chances, and the Flames did get their chances and they managed to tie it up. And this is another thing about the NHL in the last couple of years and especially this year, and I love it. Like, no lead is safe. You know, look at game one. What was the lead? 6-1 and it wasn't safe?
5-1.
3-0 last night. And the funny thing is now it's almost becoming expected. I don't think many people turned the game off last night when it was 3-0 Oilers after the first period. I think most people were like, yeah, the Flames still have a chance in this one because we know how this series has gone. We know how the NHL is now in that no lead is safe. And it's great for the game. I remember the people that would text in and say, no, low scoring is better. You know, like, you got to appreciate the defensive stuff. I'm like, yeah, I do appreciate it. But you know what else I like? Wondering what's going to happen in the game and not being so sure that, well, that's a 2-goal lead. I guess I'll just watch it because I like hockey, but I know that team is not coming back.
All right, so Daryl Sutter in his post-game media availability reportedly went in and told the team that this was a winnable game despite the 3 goals surrendered in the first period. I'm assuming some of that had to do with the fact that he wasn't going to go in and say this game is over, we should go home. And I also think the other part of it is he understood the tenor of this series. Comebacks have been up throughout the NHL, like without question you mentioned it, but this series, everything is pretty much on the table in terms of unpredictability. And we saw it with the Smith goal, the Smith blunder, which tied it up in the third period. The really interesting thing here, I don't know how much of Sutter's post that you caught, he was weirdly positive.
Yeah, he was in a good mood, wasn't he?
He was
chuckling away and like,
he's almost more positive after losses than wins. That's all part of his MO, right?
Yeah.
But he had not a lot of bad things to say. He said he thought that Rasmus Anderson's shot was going to go in when it first left his stick.
Yeah.
Like he was full of quips and little,
you could actually,
like,
if
asides.
If you watch the replay, you can actually hear him say on the bench, that thing is labeled.
Oh, that's a good one. That's what he was saying.
Text into the Dunbar Lumber text line. Any thoughts that Sutter overplayed Markstrom in the regular season and now he's tired? Being tired was a problem in previous years. My initial reaction is, yeah, it's perfectly possible. And Jay Woodcroft sure loves to bring it up.
Yeah.
The head coach of the Edmonton Oilers.
Put it this way. You're not the first person, dear texter, to throw that out there. That's out there all over the place now. I've seen it numerous times on social media. I don't think they've gone that far down the road yet on the broadcast, although Woodcroft's brought it up on a handful of occasions. That being said, I mean, you don't get tired at the snap of a fingers, do you? He was really good in the Dallas series. And to be honest, the save that he made on Dreisaitl right before the Smith blunder might have been his best. We definitely found his game yesterday, but the classic Markey pick six to start is really all about and all that anyone remembers from that one.
We haven't mentioned that the Rangers also evened their series with the Carolina Hurricanes. We'll talk about that with Wish because I think he's been at these games.
Yep.
Or maybe been at a few of them, at least the ones
for you on the series
in New
though.
York. Okay, what was the question?
How much of it are you watching?
I'm watching a fair amount of
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
yeah. It's nasty.
Yeah, it got nasty in games 3 and game 4 because it was funny. Arthur Staple from The Athletic did his post-gamer yesterday. And Lazarus said that he's writing this series as well. And they both said this was kind of a boring affair through the first 2.5-3 games until the end of game 3 when things got spicy. And now you've got a good running narrative with the violence at the end of it. And the other running narrative, which I'm sure we'll bring up with Wish, is why can't Carolina win a game on the road? It's the most bizarre stat in these playoffs so far. 6-0 at home, 0-5 on the road.
So we'll talk about that with Wish. But back to the Edmonton Oilers, who, remember, had to fire their coach this season. Although I guess that's not that surprising anymore that a team that fired its coach is making a run in the Stanley Cup playoffs. We see it over and over again. The series isn't over yet. And for a series as wild as this one, we definitely shouldn't count out the possibility that the Calgary Flames come back and win the next 3 games. But I have to admit, I was thinking last night, and I also know that the Avs Blues series is not over, although that one is over. I am already anticipating Oilers Avs for a spot in the Stanley Cup final because of the top 10 players in the NHL, and I threw this question out on Twitter, how many would be playing in that series?
I saw this question. Great question.
How many players would be playing in just,
of the top
just
10
two
players
teams
in the NHL?
Because I think there'd be 4.
How many would be in that series?
McDavid, Draisaitl, Makar, and McKinnon.
Okay.
And some people might even put, and I'm not talking about, don't tell me like, well, Evander Kane is playing like a top 10 player. I'm just talking about you're going into the playoffs and you make a list of the top 10 players in the NHL.
Right. McDavid's one.
McDavid's obviously on there. Mm-hmm. Now, the other 3 might not be on your list. I'll be perfectly honest with you. Like they might, and don't feel bad if they aren't, because there's a lot of terrific hockey players in the NHL. Like you just, I mean, go around the league. Think of all the guys on the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Okay, so you would have to reset it for me, though. Who are the 4 that you had, the top 10 that would be in that series? Makar.
Makar, McKinnon.
McKinnon, all the mix.
Yeah. Not the Irish, though. The Draisaitl. And McDraisaitl and McDavid.
Okay, Makar, McKinnon, McDavid, Draisaitl.
Yeah.
And so we're leaving out Kucherov, basically, and Hedman.
No, I'm talking top 10 players in the
NHL,
but that's just period.
But that's what I'm saying, is that those guys, some might consider top 10 guys.
No, but they could still be on your list. It's a top 10. Like,
what I'm saying is there could be as many as 6. Of the top 10.
Yeah, but not in the Oilers-Avs series, man. I'm not talking
about the conference final.
I'm talking about one series.
I'm looking at the Conn Smythe odds. I'm sorry.
This is like when I threw out that question yesterday and nobody understood it read the assignment.
This is me knowing that we got to do the play now read and looking at the Conn Smythe odds. I'm sorry. McDavid, Makar, McKinnon, Draisaitl. Thank you. I screwed up.
Okay, do your reads then.
I was looking at the outright Conn Smythe winner odds. Bet on hockey like never before with PlayNow Sports, your local BC sportsbook. The reason I kept pushing Hedman and Kucherov is because they are 2 of the top 6 favorites for the Conn Smythe right now. Cale Makar at 5.50. He's your favorite. Nathan McKinnon at 7. Andre Vasilevsky also at 7. Connor McDavid at 8.5. And then you've got Kucherov at 10 and Hedman at 13. Those are your outright Conn Smythe trophy winner odds. Bet on hockey like never before with PlayNow Sports, your local BC sportsbook. We got a lot more to get to on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Greg Wyshynski coming up next. Sportsnet 650. On a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough of the morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. At this point, I also need to mention our good friends, the Vancouver Canadiens. Yes, that's right. The C's are back at the Nat. For tickets or info, visit CanadiansBaseball.com, and we will see you at the Nat with a footlong hot dog and an ice-cold beer. That music can only mean one thing. It's time now for Wish Wednesday. Greg Wyshynski from ESPN here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I like how you said you have to mention, like, there's a large man tapping a bat in his open hand in the corner of the studio.
He's wearing a Mountie hat, and he's looking very sternly at me.
Being like, you better do the ad read, Buster.
And I followed suit.
Do the read. Do the read.
Hey, Wish, we decided that we would leave the majority of the New York Rangers Carolina Hurricanes analysis to you. We spent a large part of this morning talking about the Battle of Alberta. First and foremost, have you been at the majority of the games that are in New York? Are you covering this one live in person?
Yeah, for sure. Last night I didn't because we were up in Bristol for what we thought was going to be our show last night, but due to circumstances that I'm sure all Canadians are aware of, it wasn't really a time for jokey, laughy hockey shows. So I covered that one remotely, but I've been on site in New York for all of their home games the last two rounds, and I'm actually heading to Raleigh tonight for game five of the let me rephrase that. I'm heading to Raleigh tonight for the Hurricanes' victory, and then I will head back to New York for the Rangers' victory, and then we'll head back to Raleigh to see who wins game seven.
Okay, you open the door for this line of questioning. Why is it that the Carolina Hurricanes cannot win a game on the road?
You mean, why is it that the Carolina Hurricanes are the Carolina Hurricanes in Raleigh and the Hartford Whalers on the road?
Yes.
Very good question. You know, I think part of it, obviously, in the previous series at least, was their ability to get the line matchups that they wanted. I think that was really an issue in the Boston series when the Bergeron line would neutralize the Aho line. And then conversely, they couldn't get the Jordan Staal line out against the Bergeron line like they were able to in Raleigh. And it became a real key to the series, the line matching bit of it. I think that's less vital in this series. I think they've gotten maybe, I'd have to check the numbers, but I think they've gotten Staal out a little bit more against the Zibanejad line in this series. And it really hasn't mattered. And I'm fast. They definitely play with more pace and play with more physicality at home. There's a bit of a jolt that the crowd gives them that they don't have on the road. I think the weirdest thing about the series so far was game four, where, you know, game three, they were right in it. I thought they were right in the fight. They were maybe one shot away from really maybe even winning that game. I thought game four, they allowed the Rangers to carry play at 5-on-5 in a way that you would not expect that to happen based on what we know about these two teams and what we've seen metrically from these two teams. So that's a bit of a disturbing part of it. And then, obviously, the other disturbing part of it, if you're Carolina, is Igor Shesterkin has become unbeatable in this series. You know, he stopped 73 of 75 shots in the two games at Madison Square Garden. And you know, we've long said this is the guy who could take over a series, even though it didn't look like it in Pittsburgh. And that might be happening right now. So a few signs of trouble for the Hurricanes as they head back home. But they head back home where they've been unbeatable.
Are you surprised, and I know you kind of briefly mentioned this, are you surprised at all that the Hurricanes haven't been able to dominate from a possession standpoint? Even going back to the beginning of game one, and that was in Carolina, the Rangers came out and played really well, and I can't remember what the shot clock was, but it was heavily in favor of the New York Rangers. The Carolina Hurricanes ultimately pulled out the 2-1 win in overtime, but I guess just after watching Carolina all season and seeing the quality of that team and then also watching the Rangers against the Penguins and the Rangers for most of the season, just leaning on Shesterkin. Like, don't get me wrong, Shesterkin has been good in this series, but I don't think he's been in the entire story.
No, but I mean, he's been good. like when the margins are small and your goalie is doing everything he needs to do to win a series, I think he's, for me, he's been the difference maker in the series so far, even though he's not had to be, you know, Dominik Hasek back there or anything as far as like facing 80 shots every game. So game one, I felt like Carolina just didn't get to their game until the third period. And then when they did, they just rolled them. It's just a bad start. The other two games, I thought they got the better of 5-on-5 play and the better possession. Last night was weird. Like I said, they didn't play to their game. They got down early because and handed a couple of power plays to the Rangers, and it felt like maybe that that knocked them on their heels, and they weren't really able to get to their game because of that deficit, and knowing with a 2-0 deficit it was going to be really hard to rally because of the way that Shishkin was playing. So last night was the first time, to speak to your point, that I think it looked like that. I think the rest of the series they've looked like Carolina outside of a couple periods where they just didn't answer the bell. And they might look like Carolina again in game five. I mean, they've been a different team on home ice, but you know, I think if anything, if you don't believe it's the Shesterkin series, then maybe it speaks to what some Ranger fans were saying, which is that the addition of Kopp and Braun and Mott after the trade deadline really solidified some things for them at 5-on-5, and they've been trending upwards in that spot.
Is Andrew Kopp the best acquisition from the trade deadline?
Well, it sure ain't Claude Giroux, I can say that.
No, it's not.
Oh, actually, that's not fair. Giroux had a really good game in their elimination game against Washington. I was making a real cheap joke. The answer, obviously, is Ben Chiarot is the worst acquisition at the trade deadline. And you know what? And I said he'd be the worst acquisition at the trade deadline, and he was the worst acquisition at the trade deadline. No, Kopp's been great, and so great that I think it makes for an interesting conversation about where the Rangers are going to go in the offseason, because – Ryan Strome needs a new contract. Andrew Kopp needs a contract. I think clearly the acquisition of Kopp was made with an eye towards beyond the season, like beyond being a rental. And his play in the playoffs and in the regular season, I think, has only solidified that. I think he's going to get paid and quite handsomely by the Rangers, which makes for an interesting conversation about what they'll end up doing with Strome, who, you know, his claim to fame, his calling card is playing with Panarin and doing it well. It's almost like in baseball when you have one catcher that catches your ace really well. You know what I mean? Like, you got to keep that guy around to catch the guy. But in this case, I mean, you know, it becomes a monetary thing, and you wonder whether or not Strome might get squeezed out with the amount of money that they're going to give Kopp and a few other guys.
Only one game in the NHL tonight. That is St. Louis and Colorado. The series could end tonight in Colorado. I'm still shaking my head at how the Blues tried to handle the Nazem Kadri situation and how they failed so spectacularly. It was just a complete loss of composure. And also, oh yeah, Kadri had a hat trick on them. And there have been very few times where such a nemesis has gone into the home arena and embarrassed the team like that. I don't know how the Blues recover from this. What did you make of how the Blues played game four?
Well, they don't recover, first of all. There's no way they're taking three games off of Colorado with Billy Husso and Nett the way he's playing. And also giving Colorado just multitudes of possession and chances and allowing them to control the game. I mean, there was one game in the series that I thought was proof of concept for St. Louis being able to win the series, and that was game two, I believe it was, where they took it to them. I mean, like, they look every bit like the team that could win the series. And then, you know, they looked like that for about 6 minutes of game three, and then Binnington got hurt, and then the whole house of cards kind of fell apart. They all said the right things after that game. Like, it's not about one guy, you know, we're going to focus on the team, yada, yada, yada. And then, like you said, the minute in which they had a chance to get a shot in on Kadri, they dogpiled them, right? you know, they took two idiotic penalties, and then, you know, they didn't score on the 5-on-3, but they scored immediately after. And of course it was Kadri who scored. I picked the Blues in the series. You talked about it. And I will put an asterisk next to that pick because I truly believe that they would win this series if Binnington didn't get hurt. I truly do. Like, I think they played extraordinarily well in game two. You could see the difference between the way they play with Binnington and Nett and the way they play with Husso and Nett, insofar as when you have Binnington back there who's able to handle the puck, when you have Binnington back there that you know you can depend on, it allows you to get more into the offensive flow. And then you watch the way they played at the beginning of game four, where they know, A, they've got a goalie who's not playing very well back there, and B, you have a goalie that can't play the puck very well back there. And it's no surprise they only had six shots on goal, I think it was, in the first period. You know, they scored a goal, but they only had six shots on goal. So once that injury happened, they unraveled. And you know, I don't know what kind of black magic the Avalanche have been practicing to have consecutive series in which the starting goaltender on which the opposing team builds their entire, you know, building on gets injured. But prayers up for Mike Smith next round.
If it's Avs versus Oilers, how many of the top 10 players in the NHL on your personal list would be playing in that series?
Yeah, I saw that tweet. I think it was your tweet last night. You mentioned that, right? And I didn't really put that together. But, yeah, I mean, it's at least – well, I mean, we start with four, right?
Yeah.
And you can kind of, like, go to Rantanen if you think you're high on him and maybe he gets the five. I don't think I'm missing anybody on the Oilers side. So, I mean, it might be, like, potentially half the guys, maybe.
Yeah.
It's an incredible series. And, you know, the thing about what we're watching with Connor right now is, I hearken back to maybe Mario as the last guy that has been able to exert his will on playoff games and playoff series in the manner in which Connor has, which, of course, makes Draisaitl Jágr in the sense that, like, all he does is great stuff, but maybe not necessarily gets the same spotlight as the guy on the team that everybody focuses on. Forever to be destined to Pippen to McDavid's Jordan. But it's going to be a fascinating series. I think for all of the excitement that we have about the way that their stars are playing and for all of the nail-biting tension that comes along with Mike Smith, who is going to be the focus of my column tomorrow. I cannot wait to write about Mike Smith. they can play pretty good hockey as a team. I think the Jay Woodcroft trend that we saw when he took over that team of them being able to be a sneakily good and effective defensive team has bled over to the playoffs. I think it's an underrated aspect of the series that they've been able to handle the Flames' best players as well as they have. I don't think it's necessarily these guys are choking. I think it's also what the Oilers are doing against them. And I think that I'm very confident the Tampa Bay Lightning are going to play for the Stanley Cup. Let me put it that way. I am very not confident as to who will emerge from a Colorado-Edmonton series.
How likely is it that Evander Kane is playing for a different team next season?
I would say it's not likely, right? I mean, like, I'm wondering whether or not contract structure maybe ultimately determines what this guy looks for.
Mm-hmm.
And by that, I mean, if you're the Oilers and you want to keep him hungry and you don't want to maybe make the same mistake that the Sharks did, like, maybe you give him a deal that's more commensurate to a friendly term. And then it's on Evander to figure out if he'd want to do that or if there's someone else out there that offers him much more financial security, which for Evander Kane, I'm sure, is probably the optimum thing at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm interested to see exactly what the market is for him and what he wants to end up doing. I mean, if I were him, I'd play with Connor in perpetuity. Like, why leave?
Right.
But I would imagine they'd want him back, especially just because of the constant need and want for guys that can play with your elite talent. Now, the bigger question is, like, I don't think anybody but Connor is winning the Conn Smythe for the Oilers, but it would be interesting if, like, Evander Kane had, like, an historic amount of goals in the playoffs.
Right.
Like, how the voters handle that. Because I know the voters, and I don't think they'd handle it very well.
Yeah. Wow. Connor's going to get it anyway, so I wouldn't worry too much about it.
Let's talk about that, because, you know, I don't know if you know this, boys, but a plank in my platform is – I talked about this with Merrick last week – is that the Conn Smythe Trophy is for playoff MVP, unlike the other sports where it's for the finals MVP.
Yep.
Give me Oilers losing seven games. Give me McDavid with a country mile separating him from the rest of the scoring pack. And give me a conversation about how Connor McDavid should be the Conn Smythe winner, no matter if the Oilers are in the final or not.
Well, thank God the Oilers lost is the first thing that I will say.
In this mythical scenario you've dreamed up, that's the best part. You know what? Yeah. That would be fantastic from a breaking the brains of the Professional Hockey Writers Association, because, I mean, I'm trying to remember in NHL history, outside of a goalie, someone that's been able to pull the feat, right? It's just, it's so rare. And sure. But again, you bring up a really good point, because I think a lot of people do overlook that in the other sports, it is the final series MVP, not the MVP of the entire playoffs. Those are two fundamentally different conversation.
But more weight is always given to the actual Stanley Cup Finals, whether it's intentional or not.
It is.
Yeah, except for 2003, where Jagr had three great rounds.
Correct.
Crapped the bed in the final and still won Conn Smythe in a losing effort. Now, not that I'm a Devils fan or anything.
Not that you're bitter about it.
Not that you remember that sort of stuff.
No, but here's the thing. So Forsberg led the league in scoring in 2002. The Avalanche didn't play in the final. Couture, I think, was third in 1 year for the Sharks. They didn't make the final. Gabrick is the best example for me for a lot of years, where it was the same postseason as Jagr. And Gabrick was, like, again, by a country mile, the best scorer on the Wild during their run to the conference final that year. So there have been some instances of guys that you could point to and say these guys were by far the most valuable players to their team. But it just, you know, it's become sort of de facto. I mean, it's never happened, right? So it's like tradition that you don't even look at the previous three rounds and the teams that are not playing in the final. We have to give the MVP to someone in the final. And it's funny, it doesn't work like that all the time in international tournaments. Like the Olympics, you can have an MVP that's not in the gold medal game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird to me always that, you know, we have this default setting of we've got to pick somebody in the final. Well, maybe you don't. Maybe if Connor McDavid is the reason why the Oilers go to, like, the conference final and play really well there but fall short, like, I defy you to find it someone, and maybe the only guy would be Vasilevsky. I defy you to find anybody on, like, Tampa or Colorado that is going to be as valuable to their team as McDavid was to the Oilers. It just won't happen. So if we're going to ever have a conversation about one of these convoluted things your boy is always theorizing about, it might be the year to have it.
You're kind of nibbling around the edges of the Erik Karlsson situation from a few years back, are you not? Didn't someone actually vote for him for Conn Smythe, despite him and the Ottawa Senators not getting to the final? I think it was 2017.
What a brave soul that is.
Yeah.
To do that. It should happen. Again, there's nothing in the rules that say a dog can't play basketball. There's nothing in the rules that says you can't vote for somebody outside of the final for Conn Smythe. It's the nature of the rule. And you guys know I'm a Hart Trophy strict constructionist. I am a Conn Smythe strict constructionist. You can obviously pick anybody in the playoffs to be the MVP. I will say, again, I'll meet you halfway. Like, I'm not saying you should pick somebody who lost in seven games in the first round and say that's the playoff MVP. They probably have to make the conference final for this to be a thing. But I'd have no problem if you pick somebody from a conference final and said, you know, the rest of the team was dragged there by this one player, and henceforth they should be MVP. I think that's only a logical thing to say.
I don't want to sound like we're horse trading here, but I will support your platform if you support my platform that defensemen need to start getting more love in the Hart Trophy race.
I think that's fair, but like who like,
you know, just in general, like I. The seasons that some of the defensemen are having or had this season, whether it's Roman Josi or Cale Makar, or this goes back, you know, years when these defensemen have this terrific season. And not only do they not become finalists, they don't even seem to be in the conversation. And I just think we sit here over and over in Vancouver and talk about the value of defensemen and the value of a number one defenseman and how valuable Quinn Hughes is to the team. And the Canucks have never had a guy like this before. And yet the MVP of the league never seems to be a defenseman, and a defenseman never seems to be even in the conversation.
Well, 2 decades since somebody's won it, right? Pronger back in 2000.
Yeah. So I'm down for that. Cause I think again, like much like goalies have the Vezina, you know, defensemen have the Norris. The voters vote for the Norris. They don't vote for the Vezina. And I'm sure there's probably a sense of, like, they've got their own award. It's the same thing with the Cy Young and pitchers in baseball, right? Like, you can't – pitcher doesn't win MVP because the pitcher has their own award. And so
– Yeah, but like, but a forward has the Art Ross, really, except
well,
in the odd
Ross,
year that Bobby Orr won.
But the Art Ross is a trophy of achievement, like statistical achievement. The other ones are subjective. But I'm just telling you, I think that's – as a voter, that's why – defensemen don't win the Hart more is because I think it's because they have their own award. That said, there's nothing you said that's incorrect. I mean, like, they play more than forwards.
Mm-hmm.
They frequently play a more vital role than forwards because they are tasked with, you know, I mean, look at Victor Hedman. Like, he's tasked with being the defensive stopper, right? He plays like 24 to 25 minutes a night, and he's tasked with being an offensive force for them. And he does both extraordinarily well. And so I agree with you, man. Like, I feel like defensemen have long been overlooked for the MVP. And I don't know what we want from him. I mean, like, you know, Roman Josi's put together one of the best offensive seasons we've seen from a defenseman in 30 years. And I'm not even, you know, he wasn't the finalist. I don't even know if he finished in the top five. So, I can support that for the right defenseman, especially just because it's become a de facto forward award. Goalies and defensemen unions unite and march on NHL headquarters demanding equal heart treatment.
Wish, we just got a couple minutes left here. Where do the Florida Panthers go from here?
Well, you know, I talked to some people around that team before the playoffs, and the sense I got was that they were ready to extend Brunette. They were ready to give him a multi-year extension. Obviously, the regular season went incredibly well. And so my question about him is, winning a playoff round, which is, again, something the franchise had not done since 1996, so it is a big deal that they did, and then getting your lunch handed to you by a two-time Stanley Cup champion and arguably the best coach in the sport, where do you go from there? Like, is the Tampa series enough to say this guy can't get it done because when adversity really hit, they couldn't figure themselves out? Do they look at what happened to the offensive system and say there's something malfunctioning here where they don't know how to modulate what they do for playoff hockey? And you know, can another coach crack that code? It'll be interesting to see where they go with it. I honestly don't know. Because I think that they were prepared for Brunette to be that guy. And I've already seen Barkov this morning say they want him back.
Yep.
So it's, I don't know, man. It, you're messing with something pretty good that based on regular season record, based on, you know, gutting out that win against the Capitals. It's funny how, like, the Lightning have put two teams into a crisis of conscience, and the Leafs have already said, we're not going to overreact because we lost to a dynastic team. And I wonder if Florida ends up in the same spot philosophically.
Wish, great stuff today, man. Thanks a lot for doing this. We really appreciate it. Enjoy all the games this week and this weekend. We'll do this again next Wednesday.
Anytime. Thanks.
Thank you. Greg Wyshynski from ESPN here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Okay, we got a lot more to get to on the program. Coming up, one of our favorite guests on the Halford and Brough Show, Stephen Brunt, acclaimed author, host of his own show, Fan 590 in Toronto. Warning. There will be some Canadian Football League talk.
But we're also going to talk about the Battle of Alberta.
Yep.
And maybe talk about some of Stephen's memories of the old Battle of Alberta and how this one might be one of the wildest series that we've seen in the playoffs in quite a while. And it is an all-Canadian one that we've all been looking forward to.
Speaking of the Battle of Alberta, 8 o'clock hour, Rick Ball from the Calgary side of things, Jack Michaels from the Edmonton side of things as we dive deep into the Stanley Cup playoffs. A reminder, there's only the one game tonight. It is St. Louis and Colorado. The Avs are looking to close out the series against the Blues at Ball Arena in Denver. That one goes tonight. So we got a lot more to get to on the program. Brunt coming up in the next hour. And then in the 8 o'clock hour, we're going to go Battle of Alberta heavy with Jack Michaels and Rick Ball. It's a big show. Your job as a listener is to not go anywhere and keep it on the dial. The Halford and Brough Show, Sportsnet 650.